and good morning and welcome to Coffee with the Coder, episode 41. We're so excited to see you with us today. It's going to be an amazing day here at Coffee with the Coder, and I want to just jump right in to the first question. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning, Pam.
All right, let me read you what Denise had to say. She works in an ER, and then she says, I'm in an ER. Okay, so I'm an ER coder, works for a hospital in Pennsylvania, and I've come across the diagnosis of neuropraxia or neuropraxia several times now where the patient comes in for numbness or tingling sensation. A recent patient with this had it throughout the body, so I end up spending a lot of time on this diagnosis and not having a clear-cut answer. I've been using the symptoms as my code because I don't feel comfortable coding injury to the nerve where there's not a clear cause for this diagnosis. Another question was lesion of the nerve. Again, the nerve affected is not specified. So what's the correct diagnosis code to use for neuropraxia with no other specifics documented? And I want to thank you for doing this. I try to listen to all the episodes, but if I can't be there live, I listen to the recording. So thank you for that question, Denise. Paula, what can you tell us?
Okay. Well, you're welcome, Denise. And, you know, if you were a part of the Insiders, you heard a special for only Insiders today. But the part that I can share with you is that we opened our membership today for the AQIQ Revenue Warriors, and it closes at 5 Eastern. So if you are a part of that group, there was a special in the Insiders. So you got to be part of the Insiders to get it. So if you join the AQIQ Revenue Warriors, it's as a founding member who can make the way for future members, it's $240 a year or $24.90 a month. So you can go to our Facebook page or www.aqiq to join. So now back to your question. We did a little research on this. Well, we did some research, I guess I should say, not always a little research, because, you know, we were thinking like you. The definition of neuropraxia indicates that it is a nerve injury. And we looked in several sources, so the Dictionary of Medicine and Nursing and Dorland's Medical Dictionary and some others describe or define neuropraxia as failure of nerve conduction in the absence of structural changes. It could be due to blunt injury, compression, or ischemia. So Mosby's Medical Dictionary simply says the interruption of nerve conduction without loss of continuity of the axon. Now, we found another website that I'm not sure it's a vetted resource, but it's called healthcaretip.com. But I liked what they said about it because it really lined up with some of those definitions that I read. And it says, the word neuropraxia is coined from apraxia, which simply means impairment or loss of ability to carry out some complex and coordinated movement with no sensory or muscle impairment. It's also defined as a peripheral nervous system disorder with temporary loss of sensory or motor function as a result of a nerve conduction blockage. The condition mostly lasts for an average of 6 to 8 weeks, and the patient usually recovers fully. In fact, it's the mildest form of nerve injuries, which, you know, usually recover over time. In the condition, the axon usually remains in good condition, but the damaged myelin may cause interruption in generation of impulses through the nerve fiber. Now, we went on because we wanted to make sure that we looked for vetted resources, if you will. So the National Institute of Health also qualifies this diagnosis as an injury. They state peripheral nerve injuries pose various challenges to patients, ranging from mild discomfort to lifelong impairment. The mildest form of injury is called neuropraxia. And then they go on to define it as the focal demyelination without damage to the axons of the connective tissue, which is very similar to, you know, what we already had read. So one of the things that you need to think about here in the coding, now, so there's actually two headsets here I want you to think about. According to those definitions that we read, the injury could be from wear and tear or from a traumatic event. The code itself does not identify the cause. Yes, best practice is we want the physician to document the cause, but the code itself is simply an injury to the nerve, So, and it's a code, and you would have different nerves that would be identified with a code from the category that starts with an S. So, of course, you know, again, now, if you are not seeing, or if you're working with your clinical documentation improvement person, or if you are that person as well, and the physician is not documenting the clinical picture of the patient to support the definitions that we read, then that's another issue. You need to, you know, query or have that CDI query or have discussion with that doc in order to get clarification and maybe even educate the physician that the term he or she is using may not be appropriate for, you know, the diagnosis. But now this is not something you can go, hey, you're doing this wrong, because it's always, you should always approach those physicians in a learning, you know, say, can you tell me about this diagnosis and get a little bit of information about it, rather than, you know, you're working to resolve an issue. You're not going trying to argue the fact, because sometimes we get in trouble with that one. But so the code for the injury would be reported even if we don't have the cause. But like I said, best practice is we do want the cause. And you said also, well, I can't think of anything else. I was just trying to fill in the rest of your answer. So if I miss something, please reach out again, and we'll respond by email and then readdress it on a future episode, just to come back since we answered it today. And thank you so much. And Pam, back to you.
Great. That was very helpful. So now we're going to move over to Maryland, just a little bit down the road from Pennsylvania, where Sue has a question. And I believe Sue is in an inpatient rehab, so let's see. In regards to IRF-PI coding for the etiology, I would like advice on how to code for a patient who presents to the rehab following an acute CVA with right hemiparesis, who has residual right hemiparesis. They still have right hemiparesis from a stroke 3 years ago, and the right side is further weakened from the new stroke. So coding clinic in the fourth quarter of 2013 suggests to use the residual right hemiparesis code, which is I69351, as the etiology, but my fellow coders are suggesting to use I63.9 for the acute CVA as the etiology and the I69351 as a comorbidity.
Okay, cool. Pam, I'm so glad you read that, because I read that differently the first time. In my mind, I had two different sides of the hemiplegia. So, okay, so what happens here is on the IRF-PI, and I think that I've got the gist of this question correct, in that the IRF-PI and the UB04 are two different documents. Coding Clinic does not direct or provide direction on how to code for the IRF-PI. The IRF-PI is where we use the terminology of etiologic diagnosis. And the UB04 is where Coding Clinic provides its direction. So in this case, the etiologic diagnosis is the acute condition that caused the need for rehab. Since the patient had a former right side hemiplegia and then, you know, had another stroke and it exacerbated that right side hemiplegia, we are going to report that acute condition, I think it said I63.9, if we didn't have something, you know, more specific documented in the record, as our etiologic. And our principal diagnosis on the claim form, which Coding Clinic speaks to, would be the I69.351, which is the hemiplegia. Now, your comorbidities on the IRF-PI will not be the I69351 code. It will be the hemiplegia, the acute hemiplegia code. And I apologize, I didn't look that up because I read the question wrong the first time. But your any other residuals that exist will end with I69s on the claim form. Actually, I'm going to go back and correct myself. Because the patient already had a right hemiplegia and it exacerbated, you would report the I69351 as a comorbidity on the IRF-PI. So let me just make sure I didn't confuse you like I confused myself. The etiologic on the IRF-PI is I63.9. Only because the patient's hemiplegia was already pre-existing and just worsened, would we use the I69 code as the comorbidity on the IRF-PI. If it didn't exist and it was new, we would use the code for the hemiplegia as new. And on the UB04, the principal diagnosis would be the I-69.351, and any other residuals would also be reported with I-69. So I hope that I was clear in that, and follow back up with me if you have any other questions related to that question.
Thank you, Paula. I'm going to have to listen to that one again, so some of you might want to do that too. This question is from two different people. So you mentioned a while ago sometimes we get the same question from two different people. So should I read them both right out before you start answering?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Jill says, we have a patient admitted with acute renal failure on HD. While in rehab, he received HD once, and renal decided to end HD. Coders will not give me the Z992 as patient only received it once and not ESRD. Should the Z992 be added to the IRF-PI? And then the further of the same or similar question is from Tabitha. She has a question, and she's in Florida. So she says, I have a question regarding a patient who was AKI during the rehab stay and needed dialysis once. We code the procedure, but not sure about using the Z99.2, as we typically use this diagnosis code only when they're ESRD for chronic dependence, and this patient was not. Since there is no ICD-10 counterpart for the old V56.0 and counter for dialysis, what code can it use, if any? The case mix coordinator is saying they will not get any extra burden of care if we only code the procedure. I only want to code it appropriately, not necessarily just for reimbursement. Thank you for taking the time to look into this.
Yeah, and HD is hemodialysis. So basically they had a patient in rehab. Yeah, so Jill and Tabitha, thanks for your question. Basically they had a patient in rehab who received dialysis one time. And the thing is, there is no rule with Z99.2 that I could find that says the patient had to have ESRD. The fact that the patient had dialysis, even if it was, you know, one time, temporary, there is no specific code for temporary dialysis, unfortunately, but the fact that the patient had dialysis meant they were dependent on it, even if for that short period. So Z99.2 would be appropriate, and that would likely be an education for the coders to make sure they capture it, because on the IRF-PI, we all know that that code is a very high tier and it improves reimbursement because you've utilized the resources to treat that patient for that issue. And the fact that they were dependent on dialysis, even for a moment, is relevant to reporting that code.
Thank you. I love it when you explain something like that because it helps to view the situation from a higher level and kind of see where everything lies. So thank you for that. Now, I've got all these four names on my desk, just kind of stirring them up like in a cup or something. And let's find out who is going to get the mug today. It's going to be, drum roll please, Jill in Michigan. Congratulations, Jill. Thank you for that question. We hope you send lots more questions. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. Next episode in 2 weeks on the 16th, and just keep sending those questions and go look over for the replay after lunch.